All right. Thank you, Jamie, for singing that song. I just want to clap for Kelly. She just carried this out here. Kelly and I fasted and prayed that she wouldn't fall down carrying this thing, and she made it through three times today. So I feel like it's been a good day. I don't know. Beautiful job. Thank you very much. So welcome this morning. I was standing out there in the lobby, and I dropped a cup of coffee, and it shot right up my shirt. But I don't think you can see it. And anyway, I had another shirt with me because I carried another shirt with me, not because I'm a forethinker, but because when Donna saw me in this shirt, she said, you know how your wife will say, is that what you're wearing? You know how that statement? That is such a full paragraph, that statement. Is that what you're wearing? There's so many things in there about my lack of fat. I don't know. And I said, yeah, yes. And she said, well, you can't sweat in that shirt. And as soon as she said that, I could feel myself start to sweat. You know that thing? It's like, I can feel myself sweating right now. And you said that. It's like way back when I was interviewing for this job for the government, and I had to go take a polygraph, and the guy goes, so the way we'll know you're lying is if you start to sweat, and immediately, like, I must be just living a lie, because I started sweating as soon as you said that, and then he said, your heart rate will go up, and this needle will jump, and I just watched it go, brrr. He hadn't even asked me a question yet, what's your name, Jamie, liar, like, that thing's going, I'm sweating, it's like, anyway, so, and I'm self-conscious because we went to film this thing there, and there was a producer there, and he said, you can't sweat when you talk. And I'm like, why did you say that? Because I'm sweating right now. He said, well, just don't lift your arms the whole time. Have you ever talked about the Red Sea without lifting your arms up? It's like, and it spread. You're like this, and it spread. You just walk around like this. And then God yelled from above. You know, like, that was stupid. Anyway, what does that have to do with today? Nothing. Okay, here we go. Sorry. So we've been doing these here at Christ Fellowship, stories from the Bible, stories from the Old Testament, which I love. It's my favorite. I love narrative scripture because most of the Bible is narrative scripture, narrative text, or poetry. And so I love this idea of doing this, and how does this stuff apply to our everyday life? Because if it doesn't, it's kind of a waste of time reading it. But it does, in fact. And when we're singing these songs, this is how I fight my battles. And the very first song about grace, I love that song. We're singing these songs, and these things are real. These are real truths, and they really happen, and they really work. But how do we know these things, and how do they play out? And so Derek was talking about Joshua and Caleb and fear, and I listened to him do that, and we were doing this thing out on the West Coast with these executives a couple of weeks ago, and they brought us in because they were having this issue in the industry that they're in, and so they bring our team in, and our team is in there so that their team can learn how to resolve problems from their true self. That's what we teach. Pretty fascinating process. It doesn't require that the people are Christian or anything like that, because it's true and it works and it's transformative. And so we went through that with them. And the whole process is based on the idea, it's actually a biblical idea, that everything we're doing in the present is because of what we believe about the past. That's true across the world in all sciences. That's everything you're doing in the present is based on your memory of the past. That's why the Bible is so big on not being condemned by your past, or your mind being transformed and not being conformed to old patterns, but being transformed by the renewing of your mind, or neuroplasticity, we would say today, those things. And so we're doing that with people in this executive team. And when we're teaching them about false identity and true identity and how the false identity is actually hurting them day to day and what they're doing, we start to pray about their past, not pray, sorry, that's my word. We start to talk about their past, and they go into their past, and all of them, the decision-making that they're doing in the present comes from things they decided when they were in elementary school. And so we have this, you know, we say to people, like, why are you acting like a five-year-old? Because that's where they're getting their decision-making process from, things they learned when they were five, six, seven. That's why we did this thing in Congress also in June, and we were in this room, and if one could say one thing, and the whole room would explode in name-calling. This isn't called the news. I mean, it's just name-calling back and forth. And you're reading the paper going, yeah, and we start yelling at the news. You, and we start name-calling. When did you learn that strategy of governance? Kindergarten. So, like, can you have a temper tantrums and become a leader of the U.S.? Yes! Like, and that's what's happening. It's a bunch of people screaming and yelling at each other, calling each other names, and then we duel between countries. Like, that's foreign policy. What are you going to do? I'm going to call them a name and then not talk to them anymore. Well, that's what we did on the playground. I know. Still doing it. It's called foreign policy now, though. Like, it didn't work on the playground. I know. It doesn't work now. I know. Do you have an alternative to name calling and temper tantrums and ignoring other people that you don't like? No. And on we go. So that's what we're doing with people. Like, where did you learn this strategy? Yeah, and they go back into their past, and it's very beautiful. And God meets them in their past because he was there. It's a stunning thing. He was there with them. And if they would have just known, is there another way to do this? He would have said, there is. But even as adults, when we think, where did I learn this fear from? Where did I learn that from? God, were you with me there? Yes, but I didn't invite you there. God comes even to places he's not invited. In fact, you can tell him not to come. He still shows up. He pursues his enemies. That's what he does. And then he dies for them. There's another strategy. He doesn't call you names and get mad at you and have a temper tantrum. So you can transform those memories. Anyway, so we did that. And every person that we were with in that whole process was remembering things when they were young. Yeah, I remember when I first felt stupid. I remember when I first felt afraid. Yeah. It wasn't from today. It's from back then. We're just doing it still today. Then we flew from there to 3 days with middle schoolers. Like, so from this executive committee, intense 3 days, boom, it's not even down. It's not even down. It's across equal to the same thinking that is in this room is the same thinking in the sixth, seventh, and eighth graders here. So the same strategies are in play. It's unbelievable. Like, what would you, I'd call him a big fat liar and never talk to him again. That's what they're doing. That's exactly what they're doing. It's the same strategy. So the exciting thing about middle schoolers is you can get ahead of it before they're 50 doing that. For money. So now you can get down here. It's called the newspaper article. And then you can get down here with them and you can just jump right into the present tense with them. It's so amazing. And it tells you, like, if you're going to really pour out in a person, get them way before adult. Get them down. And so when you start looking at the scriptures in the Old Testament, a lot of the Old Testament, and even into the Gospels, is with middle schoolers. If you look at the age of these people, Mary, when she has the vision of Gabriel, 14 years old. And Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're young. Joseph is young. And then, so when I got to the middle schoolers, it was like refreshing. So I just started to tell them the story of David. That's what we did together with these middle school kids. And then we had the chance to go to Churchill Middle School here and talk about identity. It's like, it's so good to get them at that age to prevent, to help avoid all the nonsense they're going to go through trying to be a sixth grader at age 50, which is what we're doing. And then sending mentally emotional third graders over to figure out how to do Middle East peace. It's not going to ever happen. What did you do? I called them a bunch of names. I have a degree, PhD from Harvard in name calling. It's called foreign diplomacy, name calling from Harvard. That's what I do. Wow, is it working? No. That's an expensive name calling degree. Yes, that's what it is. And that's what we're doing. And it's almost comical if it wasn't so tragic that that's what we're doing. And we all just engage in it. So we're with these middle schoolers. And I start telling him the story of David. And so I've been telling the story of David, and so I'm just going to tell it here, the what I told it to middle schoolers, and hope you guys will revert back to that and get it. Like that. And so David, so when David is an anointed king, so I'm telling these kids, they're like, it's multi-ethnic. It was such a diverse group of kids that we were with, the both groups that we've been with. Christian, non-Christian, wealthy, poor, all different ethnicities. It was, and some of them knew the Bible, some of them didn't know anything about it, some of them were already bored with the Bible, you know, the whole range. And so I'm just telling them the story and saying, you can go look this up later, but I'm just going to tell it to you so we can think about this story. And so here's David, here's this kid. He's probably like second or third grade, and his dad's like, you need a job. You're second grade. What are you doing hanging around the house? Let's get a job. And so your job is shepherd. Get out there and watch the sheep. So he goes out there, 8 years old or whatever he is, to start watching sheep. That's his job. Go out there and watch the sheep. Don't let anything happen to the sheep. So he's out there watching sheep, doing that. And then he's out there and he realizes, well, sheep are stupid. But sheep can recognize my voice if I have a certain sound and I make a certain sound, they listen and they follow. And he's learning all these principles about sheep. He starts writing stupid poetry about sheep. He's just a kid, he doesn't know. I'm gonna write poems about sheep. And he starts writing this really bad, you know, second grade poetry about sheep. Sheep are white, you know, and that's about the extent of it. And then he sees an animal coming to get the sheep. He's like, I gotta learn how to protect these things. So he starts, I'll learn how to throw rocks with a slingshot. So this kid is out there wasting his time watching sheep, throwing rocks, and writing bad poetry. That's all he's doing. What a waste of time. Anyway, he's wasting his time. What kind of future is that going to turn into? Like if my son came to me and go, Dad, I'd like to be a shepherd that writes poetry and throws rocks. I would be like, then you'll be ruined the rest of your life. Get an engineering degree. Get a medical degree. Get something we can be proud of. We don't care about you. We need to be proud of it. No, Dad, I think I got a big thing going with this poetry. I'm thinking of calling it the Psalms. That ain't going to sell. That stuff ain't going to sell. No one's going to read that stuff. I'm going to send you a class on how to steward your time. So he's out there. Like, that's what he's doing. Anyway, removed from that waste of time is Israel and all that's going on. We don't care about that little middle schooler. Forget him. This is going on. Saul's ruining everything. Samuel can hear from God. Samuel's in a crisis. They reject me. Oh, they don't reject, you know, and all that. And then God's like, I have another king, a better king. House of Jesse. Get out there, find him. He's a son of Jesse. Ah, get out there. Jesse, you have a king among your kids. He's like, I knew it. Bring him in. It's my oldest one. Man, that kid could say the alphabet in first grade, this kid. He was in the Bluebird reading group in kindergarten. I knew he was going to make it. Bring him in. Nah, that's not him. What? Who's the next one? Well, he wasn't that good. He was okay. He's a community college kid. You know, I don't know he's going to amount to anything. No, it's not him. And they go through all of them. Do you have any other sons? Nope. No, I don't have any. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. You know, if you have a lot of kids, you know this. Did we leave anyone? No. Oh, we did leave, you know, that thing. And so, no, I have one more. Bring him in. Well, I'm just warning you. He watches sheep, he throws rocks, and please don't ask him to read a poem to you because they are awful. They're awful. All right, bring him in. And Samuel looks at him. He's the one. That's the one. Jesse's like so concerned. Him? Because like that's going to be his king. That kid? I don't even respect him. He's my own kid. Like now he's going to be a king? What's he going to do? Watch sheep write poems and throw rocks at people? Is that going to be his kingship? And Saul's like, Samuel's like, What has God been doing with this kid all this time? Building identity into him. But nobody else was there. He doesn't need anybody else there. He's doing it. This unimportant middle schooler, who cares? God cares. and he's with them. This is what I'm telling the middle schoolers. What are you guys doing in your spare time? And they're like, we don't know. Like, God's there. He's building you into something. My mom says he's not. She could be a little off. Parents in the Bible are sometimes wrong about their kids. Sometimes. And so I'm telling this story. And so David, so at 13 or 12, he's crowned, he's anointed king. And Samuel anoints him king, a sixth grader. And it says the Spirit of the Lord came on the sixth grader and never left him all the days of his life. A middle schooler. And so David's like, he got his identity. He received his identity in community from God. That's how you get identity. That's how all identity is it's received in community from God. It's not generated inside yourself thinking, I'll be this based on what these people think. That's called radical individualism, and it produces conflict and fear and name-calling and self-protection and self-promotion. But identity from God, it's like, wow. Huh. And then you don't have to self-protect and self-promote because the identity doesn't come from what you do, what you have, and what people think about you. It comes from God. And you just have to receive it and be it and walk in it and believe it. So David's like, and Samuel says to, you know who this kid is? This is a shepherd, poet, warrior, king. That's who this is. A shepherd, poet, warrior, king. That's who this kid has always been. And he knows it down here and he's moving towards it. If people would stop telling him that's a waste of time. Your identity should look like this. You should look like this. And the world crushes our identities. And so he's walking in that. He's growing up in that. Saul sees him. Saul says, boy, this person's a person of music. They're a person of war. They're well spoken of. They're attractive. I want him in my eye. He hires him. David goes to his summer job, works for Saul. Saul then gets like threatened by him. He's like, oh, he really is good at all this stuff. Get him out because we're competitive. Can't have that guy in the office. He'll be better than me in the scarcity model of life. I got to protect myself. Get rid of him. He leaves. 17, he's a junior in high school, taking food to his brothers. The country's at war. He's taking food to his brothers. The little shepherd, poet, warrior, king bringing food. And he brings it to his brothers. And the shepherd, poet, warrior, king looks at, because you can't see a scenario except through your true self. The false self will just withdraw in fear. The true self will always see the thing as their true identity. It's engaging to him. They're like, he's looking at it. Wow, Israel's in trouble, shepherd. Israel's in trouble. What can I do about it? We need to fight that guy, warrior. Because these are my people, king, and I bet I can write an awesome poem about it later. I've written 23 so far. And so that's how he sees it. Your kids, us, when you look at things, your true identity is screaming to come forth. The false kills it. The fear shuts it down. The enemy, you're stupid. And so David's brothers, because his brothers are afraid, fearful people can't stand courageous people. Fearful people cannot have a courageous person around them because it critiques their fear. If that guy's not afraid, we're going to make him afraid. And you project your fear. You just keep projecting your fear. And everyone's projecting their fear because if you're not afraid, something's wrong with you. Because if you were smart, you'd be terrified like us. And we're mad because God's not afraid. God, what are you doing? What are you doing? Come on, what are you doing? We want God to be afraid. It's like that. And so they say, hey, David, I don't know who you think you are, but we'll tell you who you are. You're an arrogant punk. And you are nothing but a low-level shepherd. Get out there and watch your sheep and stop trying to engage here in some kind of noble endeavor. And David, because he doesn't get his identity from his family, he gets his identity from God, says, hey, you know what? I appreciate your fear. I get it. Have mercy. God forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. But I'm going to go out there and be who I am regardless of what you think, family. And then Saul hears about it and he goes to Saul. And Saul's like, listen, David, how old are you? 17. You don't know what you're doing. We are the older generation. We know what we're doing. And here's what's wrong with your generation. You don't know what you're doing. We haven't tried anything. Yeah, but whatever it is, it ain't going to work because you don't know what you're doing. We know what we're doing. Yeah, but what you do doesn't work. Shut your mouth when the older generation is talking. Now, what are you going to do out there? What are you going to hear? Let me put the old way of fighting on you because that's the way we do it. Don't violate what we've done. Yeah, but what you have done is losing. Stop talking and fight the old way. And David's like, you know what? I respect you, kind of, but I'm not doing it. I have to fight in my own identity because this is a new day and that's a new problem and you guys don't know how to do it, but we do. Will you give me permission to go out and fight in a new way? Don't be conformed any longer to the patterns of the world. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Stop conforming. It didn't work last year. It's not going to work this year. Let's think of another way. Oh my gosh, there's other ways. Yes. All right, go out there. David goes out there. Even Goliath tries to get him to fight in Goliath's identity. He won't do it. He wins. Here's how he fights his battles. Here's how David fights his battle. In the identity that God gave him. That's how he fights his battles. Not in any other identity. In the identity that God gave him. Which means it would be really good to know the identity that God gives you. That's what I'm saying to the middle schoolers. Boy, wouldn't that be good to know. So that when you're in school, your identity's coming forward. And you don't worry about what they think and what that teacher says. You're just going forward and like, I got to get through third grade so I can get to fourth grade and get on to this identity like that. It's so fun to watch them and they start thinking about, what is my identity? Don't get your identity from them like that. Now he beats Goliath. He doesn't have to pay taxes anymore. Oh my gosh. Who'd have thought there's a way never to pay taxes again? I didn't know that. Well done. He doesn't have to pay taxes again. He gets a wife. Boom. Wow, this is all falling into place. And she's royalty like that. And everything's going fine. And then David just keeps walking through that identity through his life. 30 years old, still not king yet. He's still not vocationally king. It doesn't matter. He's identity king. Do you understand that? You don't get your identity from a vocation. You bring your identity to a vocation. Right? So Satan only attacks identity. He doesn't attack a vocation. Satan's attacking my job. Satan doesn't care about Walmart. He doesn't care about it. Like he's attacking my job. He doesn't care about your job. He cares about your identity. That's the only thing he'll attack. Like that. David's moving along. David realizes, wow, this is getting really tense. Saul's really threatened. I'm going to move my family up here to protect them. Puts them in a cave. When he puts them in the cave, 400 people show up. We'd like to be in the cave with you and your family, shepherd, poet, warrior, king. And David's like, who are you? And here's how the scripture describes the 400 people. In debt, depressed, and disengaged. That's how, they don't even have an identity. They don't have individual identity. It's just a group identity. What's the group identity? In debt, depressed, discouraged, and disengaged. No identity. And David's looking at him going, wow, 30 years old. By the time he's 32, those 400 are now 600 just men, and their identity is no longer in debt, discouraged, depressed, disengaged. It's now by their name, Abishai. And Abishai fought the lion men of Moab and prevailed. That's how distinct their identity is now. From this mob of, you're just in debt and we're depressed and we're disengaged, to one by one, Abishai, Benaiah. Their identity starts to come forth. Where are they learning that from? From David. How does David know how to bring identity into these people's life? Because he has an identity. You can't give away what you don't have. David is like, I am a poet, warrior, shepherd, king, who are you? We are in debt, disengaged. No. Those aren't identities. Those are accusations. Those are lies. Who are you? I am Abishai. David's like, I don't fight lion men of Moab, do you? Yes, good, because there they are. I'm like Philistine giants. I don't do lion men of Moab. Do you? Yes. Oh, Abishai, the lion men of Moab fighter, go in your identity, get him. And his team starts to form. And then they start to be called, when they're all together in a room, Gibor. Oh, you're talking about the Giborim is the plural. Are you talking about the champions? That's what they're called now. In debt, discouraged, disenfranchised. Identity, 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 coming from the one who gives identity. David, who got his identity from God, he's just passing out identity. Who are you? Let's discover it. And then these people become collectively the champions. 2 years. And nobody can outfight them. Nobody. They're incredible. Where do these people come from? From that little shepherd, poet, warrior, king. That guy. And now they're moving around, and then comes this incident. 1 Samuel chapter 26 comes this incident, and this is what we have to watch out for, because the enemy will never give up. He's not afraid of David. He's going to keep coming after him. And so in 1 Samuel 26, David is up in the cave. He's got his champions with him. His family's there. They're powerhouses. He's invincible. He's immortal. And he's looking down, and Saul brings 3,000 men and surrounds his 600. Doesn't matter to David. He's not laying in bed going, oh my gosh, they have 3,000 guys, we have 600. God, 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 where have you gone? He doesn't do that. He thinks he's going to win. Why? Because he's the shepherd, poet, warrior, king. And God is with him, and God gives him identity. If he's going to die, it's because God's bringing him home, and okay. But he's not afraid. And so then he says, I think I'm going to go take a walk among those guys down there, the enemy. It's like saying, I'm going to go take a walk among ISIS, just see what's going on. Like, can you imagine? They want you dead. Yeah, but God doesn't want me dead, so sorry. That's how he thinks. But so do his men. Anyone want to go walk around the enemy? Abishai, I will. Okay, let's go down through the ranks of the bad people, the bad guys. He's in a neighborhood you're not supposed to go in. Don't go in that neighborhood. God can't go there. He's in our neighborhood. He didn't go in that neighborhood. You go in there, God's like, come back. What are you doing? David's walking around in there. They walk right up to Saul, right past Joab, his super Navy SEAL protection team. David's like, I have a bunch of criminals that are better than these guys. So he walks through all them. He looks at Saul and Abishai. Ooh, Abishai's, you know what we could do? Just a thought. I'm not sure this is from the Lord, just an idea. I've killed lion men of Moab. Yeah, David's like, I know, I've heard of, I say it about you. Well, I can also kill that dude right there. And he says it, he bragged. I won't even have to hit him twice. One hit, boom, you'll be king forever. Let me do it. But see, David doesn't have to self-protect and self-promote. He's not in competition with anyone at the office because he's just being who God made him to be, shepherd, poet, warrior, king. He's like, I don't need you to do it. I don't need you to do it. I don't need your help, actually, because God will do it when he wants to do it. I just felt like walking around in here. Take a little piece of his clothing. Let's use it, I guess, you know, because he's human. And hey, they go up there, and David's like yells down, hey, Saul, guess where we were last night? Guess what Joab, your superstar guard, missed? Don't you feel like David's getting a little off track there? And God's like, stay on the speech, you know, get off on the, don't make fun of Joab, stay on focus. Okay, yeah, right. Why are you chasing me, a little flea in the desert? I don't want to fight with you, Saul. I'm not against you. Like, I will wait. God will do what he does. Why are you chasing me? I could have killed you. I didn't. Doesn't that make sense to you? And Saul says, oh, David, my son, truly today you have proven that my life is valuable in your eyes. Can you imagine? Think of an enemy people group to the United States that wakes up one morning and goes, you know what? We've been thinking about what we hear the Christians in the U.S. say, and we realize now that our lives are super valuable to them. Don't you wish they would say that about us? Instead of like, I'm pretty sure they want us all dead. Don't you wish they would say that? Man, I didn't realize that we're super valuable to those believers in Jesus. And Saul's so moved by that, he leaves. Here's a foreign policy strategy. How about the person you're negotiating is convinced that they're valuable to you? That's not one we're trying. And so Saul leaves, and it's incredible. And David's Shebarim are like, oh, you are like the most unbelievable person we've ever seen. We want to be not like you, greater than you. We want to kill more giants than you ever killed, and they do. We want to fight more battles than you've ever fought, and they do. They're better than David, because that's what a good leader does. He's not in a competition with, and it's all beautiful. And then David, that's on a Tuesday. We're the best, we're invincible, we're immortal. And then Wednesday afternoon, 1 Samuel chapter 20, David does this, and it's his great mistake. Here's what he does. He doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't do anything bad. This is what he does. It says this, and David thought to himself. And David stopped fighting his battles, inquiring of God. And he did this, and he thought to himself. God, take a seat for a second. I'm going to think about this on my own. He thinks to himself, and this is what he says. Surely Saul will kill me. And his men are like, what? What happened between Tuesday and Wednesday? Well, I've been thinking about this to myself. Without you, without my community, and without God, I'm just thinking to myself, we're going to lose. And his champions are standing there with him going, why are you saying that? I'm just thinking to myself, I've become my own reference point. And now the more I think about it, the more I think I'm pretty much a loser. Shepherd, all that stuff. I think we need to run away. And he takes his champions and they go with him. And the champions go with the warrior poet, Shepherd King, and they turn into thieves, murderers, lying terrorists. Why? Because David thought to himself. How do you think about things? Do you think about, I'm going to go ask Jamie. That's me talking. God, I'm going to go ask myself this question and see what me and Jamie can come up with. And God's like, good luck. That's what we're doing. We're laying in bed at night. Well, I guess I'll just talk to myself about this again. We're never going to get out of this, are we? No. You're a terrible husband, aren't you? Yes. Like, that's what we're doing. You're just talking to yourself. That's what David does. And he leads his men into disaster. He leads them right out of their true identities into false. And they become this marauding band of murderers. And then one day they come back to their village and they realize that everything they have is gone. Their wives are gone. Their children are gone. It's all gone. All from one thought. And David thought to himself that. And David sees what's become of his men and him, and he falls down on his knees, down into the ashes. He falls down into the ashes, and he's like crushed by it. And it's like he's got to tell the truth. Now, this doesn't work. This is not working. This is called confession. And as he weeps, it says he weeps until he cannot stand, and he's down there. And his men, his champions, pick up rocks to kill him. Like, what happened? We were here. What happened? And David thought to himself, that's what happened. But down there on his knees in the ashes, it says, and David encouraged himself in the Lord. And David inquired of the Lord. Everything changes again. One day, everything. How? And David inquired of the Lord. And the champions come back. And David becomes the warrior, shepherd, poet, king again. And in their true identities, they go back to become king that they've always been. That's how you fight your battles. That's how you come up out of the ashes. How? By inquiring of the Lord. I'm going to ask the prayer team to come forward. We're just going to close this out. It's a simple, this is sin to separate. That's what it is. When David thinks to himself, he separates from God and the rest just domino. This morning, there's things going on in your life and all you're doing is thinking to yourself. And it's driving you down because you can't get out of it. I'm asking you, lay that stuff that you're thinking to yourself about before God and inquire of the Lord and let him rise you up out of the ashes and show you how to fight those battles so that you win. Thank you very much.